Welcome to the Offshore Wind Podcast, hosted by Stuart Mullen and David Lenti. Offshore wind is one of the world's fastest growing energy sources, with strong year-on-year growth expected across the next few decades. Many nations are banking on offshore wind to play a major role in reaching their net zero and sustainability targets and helping their economies recover from the COVID-19 crisis. On the technology front, turbines are bigger and more powerful than ever. Offshore wind farm capacity factors continue to rise, and we're seeing a surge of interest from oil and gas giants seeking to transition their businesses away from fossil fuels, as well as increased competition from the developers who have championed offshore wind from day one. New markets in Asia, the Americas, and eventually Africa. Accelerated growth in Europe, the rise of floating offshore wind, and increasing interest in power-to-X and green hydrogen solutions are creating the basis for offshore wind to power the global energy transition. The Offshore Wind Podcast series looks at the issues facing the offshore wind industry today and tomorrow.
Hello, listeners. Stuart Mullen here. Welcome to season 3 of the Offshore Wind Podcast. I'm joined at the desk by Mr. David Lenti. David, great to see you. How you doing?
I'm very good. Thanks, bro. Good to see you. It's been, the last time we made a recording was in December of 2021. Sure are. Yeah, you're looking good. Looking good, man.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Well, the Global Wind Energy Council is going to be doing another podcast this year as well. So the Offshore Wind Podcast is not the only podcast in the GWIC stable. And I would like to bring to the desk Reshmi Ladwa, our policy officer from GWIC. And Reshmi is about to release, or maybe even has released by the time this comes out. It's in the can, the first episode's in the can, but she's doing a podcast called Road to COP27, Making the Just Transition a Reality. Reshmi, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Stuart. Thanks, David. Thanks for letting me get crash your podcast. It was a nice surprise to the day. But yeah, so I'm here to learn from the best in the industry on how to run a podcast. So take that as a compliment, if you will. I'm excited to be here and also excited to be doing this podcast. I think it's extremely relevant to be talking about COP as early as possible. And so, yeah, I'm excited to be learning from you. What do we have in store? What can we be looking forward to?
There are quite a bunch of things we have in store here for this season. But Reshmi, maybe you can just tell us real briefly, when is COP27 going to take place? Where? And what are your positions or some of the basic GWIC positions looking ahead to your podcast?
So COP27 this year will be held in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. And that will be usually around the same time it is every year, about early November to mid-November for 2 weeks. So the team and I are as excited as ever to be going out into some warmer weather. Yeah, exactly, Stuart. Looking forward to spending another 2 weeks with Stuart after COP26. In what will definitely be warmer weather. So my podcast is going to be covering a variety of topics. I think I was a bit concerned and a bit hesitant about calling it or giving the podcast a title that was a bit broad, but I think there are so many different aspects to the just transition, so many different topics you can cover under the COP20 or the COP umbrella, let alone the COP27 umbrella. And so we'll be looking at loads of different things. Our program looks strangely similar, but I can steal a few of your ideas and maybe even do them in a bit of a different way. But we'll be looking at energy security. Like you said, you mentioned the Russia-Ukraine conflict. We'll be covering misinformation and disinformation, climate anxiety, a real range of workforce development, a real range of topics. So that's what we've got on the agenda. Let's see how that comes into fruition.
Oh, that sounds absolutely excellent. I think it'll be a very good parallel podcast to go with ours. So maybe you can give us also a little bit of your background, your experience so far, and tell us how you got into the wind industry.
Absolutely. So, I really do owe it to GWEC. So I was onboarded onto the GWEC team through an internship program, which I did at the University of Sussex, which is in East Sussex, Brighton, for those of you that are UK based. I studied energy policy. So that's what I wanted to go into. And I was keen to pursue a renewables based career. And there was some internships that they ran in collaboration, which I was fortunate enough to gain a place on. And so after that, I've been at GWEC for a year now, Stuart.
Yeah, it has been.
Right, I think.
Yeah.
So there for a year. Then after my internship, they asked me kindly to stay on and work as a COP26 officer. And I did that for about 3 months, and then I became full-time. So a bit of a GWEC success story. But yeah, loved it ever since.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you mentioned that there's some overlap between our podcasts or the different podcasts. And I mean, we tend to filter everything through the lens of offshore wind. And, you know, that's quite a specific lens to, in which to filter. And, you know, it's a very specific view of the world. But we have so many people that are, you know, start listening to this podcast and think, oh, you know, we'd like to hear a bit more. So I'm really happy that it sounds like it's going to be an awesome podcast that you're going to put in place. So have you started recording any of the episodes yet?
We have started. Nothing has been released yet, but we are. I think once we hit the ground, we'll be running.
Okay. And can you give anyone a little bit of a sneak peek as to what you've recorded already? Or because I know that a couple of weeks ago, GWEC had an event at the Conduit Club on misinformation, and I happened to notice that you did mention that as one of the topics you were covering in the show. Any correlation between the two?
Yes. Do you know what? Since you noticed I went missing, I was indeed recording a podcast that day, and that was on the topic of disinformation and misinformation within climate journalism and within, you know, the climate change space. So that is coming soon. Hopefully we can share more on that later, but it was a really great event. We had that so we recorded that session the same day as our climate misinformation event, and I feel like it was a really great event. It opened up people's eyes to the challenges that we face, and so yeah, no, I'm really excited about that. It's one of my favorite topics, so I'm hoping we can share more on that soon.
Yeah, the event at the Conduit Club was fantastic and really fascinating to have people that from outside of the wind industry talking about, you know, there are actors in the world that are deliberately propagating disinformation and misinformation. It's not something you think about on a daily basis, but, you know, when you're getting your news from Facebook or, you know, Twitter or wherever, you know, if that's your view of the world, then it's really easy because there's no sort of like the journalistic standards aren't the same. You know, anyone can write anything about you know, on these platforms.
So you mean to tell me that everything I read on the internet is not necessarily true?
No, it is. That's true. It is. Yeah, good. Exactly. It's true. Everything you read is true. Yeah, so you should believe everything you read.
Okay, good. I got it. I definitely understand it. I absolutely appreciate the work, Reshmi, that you're doing on this, because when we as an industry are faced with continual disinformation and misinformation, it's not serving anybody when we know that the opportunities are real. We know that the benefits are real. We know that the future perspectives are absolutely critical to have the right understanding and the right hope for and direction towards attaining. Then we need 100% to also be accurate and fair. Whether we like the answer or not is a different story, but we do need to be fair and accurate in whatever it is we are reporting.
Absolutely. I think also as well, it is really important to combat the misinformation, but I do also find it quite interesting hearing some of the really bizarre and funny things people say about renewables. I mean, it really can be a source of humor sometimes. So maybe to ask you both, like, what is the most bizarre or most crazy thing you've heard about renewables or wind energy in particular?
Yeah, there's, well, I mean, I've been in the wind industry for 15 years, and I think when you go to some of these town hall meetings, or, you know, like when you see the local communities get up and, you know, their first view of the world is turbines cause cancer. Okay. Yeah. There's no cancers that has ever been caused by a wind turbine. I mean, it's just a ridiculous thing. Wind turbines emit noise, you know, like they're a mechanical structure. There's just so many things that somehow almost become like a myth, like, you know, but where people kind of, and I don't mean myth as in like, yeah, like something
from Norse mythology.
Yeah. Like, but something that's kind of, you know, that it takes on a life of its own, you know, like, and people talk about, you know, all of the different challenges that the blades fly off, or, you know, and of course, you know, it's an infrastructure of things. So there can be accidents, of course, but I mean, then, you know, for every one accident, it's sort of propagated and goes out around the globe.
Selective information gathering. Yeah. From my side, there's two, they're not, I don't know, maybe stories or misinformation, but it's two questions I remember hearing asked in a developing market a bunch of years ago, where during a town hall, one of the representatives from Siemens Gamesa was there, and a person actually stood up and said, well, why do you want to put those wind turbines down in that area? It's really windy there already. Why do you want to create more wind there? Okay. So he said, okay, so this is the level we're starting at. But well, and then another one, I don't know if it was the same meeting or it was, the legend certainly reports it as being similar at the similar time. The question was from a person, where do you get the electricity from to make the wind turbines turn like that?
Wow.
Yeah. And it was, well, they make the electricity. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, again, if your view of the world is, you know, anything that's spun around has always been a fan, and if, you know, everything that, and the fans run by electricity, I mean, you can understand where those perceptions come from. Yeah. They're not the best ones, but I mean, you know, this is
a big, tall, white thing with three things that turn, and it's windy, and okay, there's can understand the correlation, but
yeah,
I think if we do look at some other topics, though, looking ahead at what we have planned for us this year from an information delivery perspective, Stuart, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the topics we have, such as market deep dives?
Yeah, sure. So I think that over the last 2 years or so, we've been talking about. There's been the IEA, IRENA, the UN, all of these organizations have put out these documents or these papers that speak to huge volumes of wind power, and particularly offshore wind power, as being a solution, a credible solution to climate change, and that offshore wind has one of the greatest potentials to be able to abate carbon. It also has a lot of usages, you know, in terms of like just the scale of offshore that you can develop further from shore, and the quality of wind resource at sea as well. And so I think that, you know, like traditionally we've seen offshore wind being a very much a European focus, and now we're seeing it take off in other parts of the world. So GWIC has GWIC has always been the organisation that goes, you know, works with the local trade associations in market and works with the developers in new markets to really lay the framework for these markets to take off. Whereas from a Siemens Gamesa perspective, I'm not sure when you guys get into the market, because it's not always, you know, we need to make the market, we need to lay, you know, make the soil fertile so that you guys can come in.
Yeah, and the GWIC role of also advising governments and legislative bodies as to what could be possible and how it needs to be implemented and executed from a long-term policy perspective.
Yep. And so, I mean, we're working with countries like the Philippines, like Vietnam. We're doing extensive work with Vietnam. We've worked with the Japanese government before. We're looking at Korea, where the industry is very strong in China, and we work with the Chinese Wind Energy Association there. The US, Brazil, we work very closely with Abiolica in Brazil. We're having actually an offshore wind, the first offshore wind show in, I think it's June 14th this year for Brazil. So this is another market that we're seeing sort of movement. You know, my home country of Australia and across the pond to New Zealand, that's also interesting. There's some potential in Africa. I mean, there's a lot of potential in most of the oceans around the world. Whether that potential becomes a reality in the short to medium to longer term, that's another question. But I think that there's a scarcity of projects on the market at the moment. I think that the market actually recognizes that there's a scarcity of projects. So we need all of these countries to step up, and we need to be able to reduce the development cycle. We can't have a market that's going to take 10 years to come online. Like, you know, if you look at what happened in the US, for example, I think that we're seeing huge gains in the US, but what we've got 42 megawatts installed so far. I mean, there's a disconnect there. And I mean, when we both used to work together at Siemens Wind Power back in the day, and the old Cape Wind project was, you know, on the cards. And I think that was that was before my time even. So that was 2007, 2008.
I think that's about the time when it started. Yeah. And then it didn't materialize, as we all know.
Yeah.
So getting back to what you were saying about how Siemens Gamesa goes into a different market and is looking at things from an OEM perspective, you mentioned very, very well the prospects of a solid pipeline, a solid, reasonable pipeline that we as an OEM and then also the other OEMs in industry have the chance and ability to establish ourselves in, to make something very successful over the long term. And if everybody is going for something all at once, that obviously makes things more challenging. The geographical distances also make things more difficult. If every country is also doing the same thing, the same amount of gigawatts within the same number of years, with the same, if it's a subsidy system or if it's some type of tax credit, it does make it very hard to determine what makes most business sense for you if you don't have that, like you said, very developed pipeline and long-term clarity.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we'll have our colleague Rebecca Williamson is going to come on and
from GWEC. Rebecca Williams from GWEC. Yeah,
exactly. So she'll come on and talk about the markets and our perspective, and then we can maybe have a discussion about how we see the world versus how the OEMs see the world. Also, I think that it could be interesting to have a look this year, maybe, you know, get some developers like RWE, mm-hmm. who are the biggest winners in the US, to talk about their success in the US and how they see the world, and maybe some of the other developers to talk about how they're seeing their view of the world as well.
RWE won one of the New York Bite projects not too long ago, the lease areas. So that's super encouraging for them. Yeah, I hope to be able to secure them as well. So another thing too, I know we have previously discussed when looking at markets and growth, is supply chain and sustainability. Putting those together, especially given the situation we're in now with the instability and disruptions and so on.
Yeah, actually, and I really want to get an OEM's perspective on this, because you guys are the supply chain. You guys,
we're one of them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, all of the sub suppliers and all of the, you know, and I mean, sustainability has multiple levels in this particular front. You know, we have the sustainability, like as in whether it's viable, a supply chain, you know, how do you deal with things like supply chain blockages, inflation? How do you, like, you know, how do you pass that on? You know, are we getting enough? Can we still have like dual suppliers for components? Is there enough volume in the markets? Are we being pushed so thin with local content requirements around the globe that we need to take stock and yeah, I guess think about how we do this, how we tackle these things as an industry.
Yeah, because we need to look at the different types of sustainability. So there's environmental sustainability, which many people may think of off the tops of their heads, you know, whether it's green or CO2 reduction or similar to that. But then there's also the financial sustainability in the supply chain, as well as, of course, the purely logistical sustainability that's part of the supply chain. Do you have the components that you need? Can you get them to your facilities? And then can you get your finished product out to your customer on time? That's also a huge part of sustainability, especially from our perspective.
Yeah, I think also we need to look at some of the technologies. So, you know, what's floating wind, power to X, you know, like these are the perennials that we need to discuss year after year just to keep the market updated. And I think that we're seeing greater movement in the power to X space. But again, you know, it's really difficult to ascertain when you sit from afar how real this is. You know, are we seeing the projects materialize like we thought we would? Are we seeing the how's this going to play out? And I believe that you guys are doing something in this space. You have something coming up soon or something?
Yeah, we do. So we are looking at some more green hydrogen material to be released in the near future. We launched a white paper last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking for the next step in that. We are, of course, also involved in different projects with different customers, different developers here and there looking at it. We also, I think when we talk about technology, it would be a good idea if we could look at something such as standards and standardizations, because as the growth takes place, as the volumes get there, where does it make sense for the industry to align on something? Something as simple, I know, has been discussed at one point, was C-fastenings. So it's how do you attach, your tower section or similar to the installation vessel when going offshore? Granted, there's different designs of turbines, different areas, but it's a vessel that you need to attach something heavy to so it doesn't fall overboard. Why does that all need to be individual rather than just a standardized clamp or similar?
Yeah, I think we can have lots of conversations around this, like around vessels and also the infrastructure, like vessels have to come into ports. Are there enough ports? What are the requirements of ports? The grid connections, all of these things, all of the standard blockages or things that are potentially standing in the way for offshore wind development and rollout. One of the other things, and maybe this is getting back, we can need to round out this intro. Now we've gone into a full episode mode. But one of the other things that we need to talk about is also, where are we going to get the skills from? And so I noticed, Reshma, you mentioned earlier that you have something on like the just transition and how do we actually make a place for a new and diverse range of talent, and how do we attract the talent to the industry? I guess that's a broader industry question, but we have to have it through an offshore perspective as well.
I mean, I think that's like obviously one part of it. I think it's really important to look at promoting an inclusive workforce, a diverse workforce, but specifically with regards to the renewables industry and in particular the wind industry, I think what we've been looking at is the transition or the workforce development of those workers who are in carbon intensive industries such as coal, oil and gas in particular, I think is more relevant for the offshore wind industry, and looking at how we support those workers and sort of transition them and give them opportunities to come over to the wind industry and really help that energy transition grow and accelerate. So I think there's different parts of it that we need to consider. And I'd say, I think the wind industry is doing a really good job of being diverse and inclusive. I mean, our team, there's loads of talented women of colour. And I think we really are being the change that we want to see. But there's obviously more work to do. By the looks of it and by the looks of your programming, you will be covering content to do with like skills, certificates and transfers and how you support those workers, I guess. So yeah, I'd say there's loads of parts to it to consider.
Well, maybe we'll have to get you back on, Reshmi, when we tackle this issue, we can take the lessons that you've learned globally and then put that offshore filter on them. So this is an open invitation now. You're now officially have an open hand of a guest. Now you have to come up with some reason not that you don't want to participate now that you've said how wonderful this podcast was and how wonderful we are as people at the start of the show. Now there's no reason to come back out. Excellent. Well, I guess is there anything else, David, that we need to check off for this season? I mean, it's more than, it's about 150 episodes there.
We're getting there. We're climbing the ladder of deliverables, that's for sure. So, looking forward to the rest of this. Ocean usages, like we always talk about, and coexistence with all the different stakeholders, all the many, many people that are involved in what it is we actually do.
Well, thank you very much, listeners. I hope that you look forward to the season 3 as much as we look forward to bringing it to you. David, over to you for the final words.
Final words. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Reshmi, for joining us today. We look forward to hearing the Road to COP27, Making the Just Transition a Reality podcast when that drops. Good luck with your podcast and thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Offshore Wind Podcast, hosted by Stuart Mullen and David Lenti. We hope that you've learned something new today. And if you have any further questions, feel free to send an email to info@gwec.net. The Offshore Wind Podcast is powered by Siemens Gamesa Renewable Energy.